WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary, Lisa Nichols, and Chase Mullane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the number where you call to complain. 855-915-9636. Dial those numbers. I will pick up the phone and listen to you complain about this program.
Just about you.
Coming up later tonight.
No one hates me and Lisa.
The news industry is in trouble. How bad is it? You won't believe how bad it is. And what they're trying, what a bunch of billionaires are trying to do because they can't make money. So we'll be getting into that. Favorite things from the past week, strangest things from the past week. If you are within the immediate area of our broadcast signal, please be aware that there is some very extreme weather going on outside. You might hear the thunder blowing through the microphones. We just had the power. We just had the power momentarily flicker over here. Mm. So if we're not, if we suddenly disappear from the airwaves,
we still love you.
It's the radio gods are just shutting us off.
It's not because the FCC has come to find us. It's because of the lightning.
To be fair, that is possible.
If you are in central Middlesex County, there is a flash flood warning in effect until at least 8 o'clock tonight. If you are in southern and central Middlesex County, some of that overlaps. If you're in the Medford area, the Winchester area, Melrose, Lowell, Woburn, Malden, those towns, there is a severe thunderstorm warning. And trust me, there is a severe thunderstorm happening outside right now.
Yeah, so I got stuck in it.
I have the soaking wet skirt to prove it. Actually,
if you're a little east of us and saying, "Hey, what's the big deal?" It's coming. Okay, it's coming. So batten down the hatches.
Yeah, there's a river outside right now.
So just be aware of that. This is going to blow out of here in about an hour, and your night can go on after that, albeit hot and humid and sticky.
No, the weather that I like, so it's totally fine.
I would say Lisa's super happy about that. So, you know, as long as Nichols is happy, the rest of the world can be as well.
I say it every year. The only ones who like this kind of weather, Italians
and tomatoes. I am one of two. Pretty good.
We'll hear about the tomatoes in a little bit. In the meantime, news, what do we got going on around here?
All right, in local news, according to fire officials, a small fire atop an MBTA train caused a power issue that shut down service on part of the Green Line today. Service was suspended this afternoon on the Green Line between Government Center and Arlington Station due to a power problem at Boylston. According to Boston Fire, that problem was a result of a small fire on top of a trolley car, which is part of a three-car train between the Boylston and Arlington stops. According to MBTA spokesman Joe Pesaturo, a damaged pantograph on top of the trolley impacted the overhead wire from which it collects power, knocking out electrical service to that part of the line for every train. That sounds fun. Photos shared on social media showed riders being forced to walk on the tracks, but not to worry because there is no third rail on the green line. Passengers and staff were able to walk out of the tunnel safely after the incident. Despite the statement released by Joe Pesaturo, the fire official said that one or two people did suffer minor injuries, and Boston EMS confirmed that it did transport one patient to the hospital.
In less shocking news.
But it was a small fire.
But It was just a small fire.
One of the most commonly used subway lines.
I'm going to assume that those two people really weren't injured. They were just trying to get out of work because that would be a fantastic excuse.
Or to sue the city of Boston. That would be another. I used to work in personal injury, and trust me, those people exist.
You know, and I say this in less shocking news because this isn't shocking to me whatsoever. I mean, how many countless times have we talked about on this show the multiple incidents that have happened, not only on the Green Line, but whether we're talking about the Red Line, Orange Line, Silver Line, for that matter, that they're just not running. It's not a case of just a small fire. It's, hey, there's leaves on the track, so we can't operate today.
We really don't have, if you've been following what's going on with the New York City subway system, we really have nothing to complain about in the public transportation department compared to what's going on down there.
That's fair.
Yes, but I also want to compare the number of users in Boston subway transit compared to New York.
Well, there's fewer. There's a lot fewer.
A lot fewer. So if you're going to have that much more wear on the subway system, one would only assume that incidents would be higher and wear down and maintenance would be higher.
But they have subways that don't run every single day. We just have trains that can't run when there are leaves on the tracks.
We have four lines.
Oh, yeah.
You're really telling me that it's that difficult? And half of them aren't even underground. So you're trying
half of them to like cross the street
so
and you're crossing
to tell
the tracks.
Me we're going
to
compare apples and oranges.
That's
here.
The problem. The leaves, the stations aren't underground, so the leaves get on the tracks and then the trains can't run.
Mm-hmm.
Slippery rail, Lisa.
No,
we learned all about that in Peolis. We got some leaves on the tracks. Can't run the trains today.
No, well, that's what I love about this one person who had to be picked up by EMS is it's just kind of like, I slipped my fibula.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't pick up a lot more, you know?
Now, do we know what the small fire was caused from?
Well, apparently it was literally just
sparks.
Whatever the hell a pantograph is. It's basically the thing on top of the trolley that grabs the wire and keeps the train moving.
Mm-hmm.
Decided to burst into flames and decided to burst into flames.
Yeah.
That's pretty
right,
much what happened.
So here's the question that I'm going to
pose. Can
you
imagine being in that car, like just like, wow, my top of my head just got really hot all of a sudden?
The question that I'm going to pose to you is, knowing the system here in Boston and maintenance is a little sketchy, is this another one of those things that is falling through the cracks?
No,
Should I say falling through the tracks?
Stuff catches on fire. It happens.
Oh, does it?
It does. Sometimes
things just do spontaneously combust. I was laughing too hard to say that.
You've got electricity.
Well, maybe all the money that's being flushed in the pension of the MBTA, they can use that money to do more daily maintenance and making sure nothing combusts.
You can't let old people near electricity. That's a hazard.
Are you shocked, though, Derek? I mean,
if anything, though, like the old people are the ones who are actually going to know how to rewire things properly.
That's
true. Just be like, can I Google this?
Yeah. Where do I upgrade the firmware? No, that doesn't work like that.
Okay, so in national news, President Donald Trump spent part of today praying with evangelical leaders in the Oval Office. Social media posts from attendees show the president's head bowed in prayer as those around him laid their hands on the commander-in-chief. Vice President Mike Pence is also seen in the picture praying. White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders said the group was a faith advisory council that meets, quote-unquote, from time to time to speak about issues important to that community. The visit from the group, who overwhelmingly supported Trump during the 2016 election, was not on the official White House schedule. At the Faith and Freedom Coalition conference in D.C. last month, Trump said to the group, quote, "You didn't let me down, and I will never, ever let you down. You know that." Trump plans to leave for France this evening.
By not letting anybody down.
Were these people all bussed in by the Ted Cruz bus?
Yeah. They all got dropped off.
He was a driver.
I try to, because of my quite conservative cohorts to my left and right, I try to like lay off the Trump hate and lay off the this administration hate unless entirely necessary. But this is like the definition of not separating church and state.
But it's interesting because, I mean, Donald Trump has never been known to give displays of Christian humility.
I would say that's the other thing
is this is such, like, this is a definition of, to use a high school term, being a poser. Like, it's like, oh, these people will like me if I do this. It's like seeing his head bowed in prayer.
Every single administration have we had a president do those photo ops? And, you know, this even goes back to February when he was speaking at the National Prayer Breakfast. And I believe first he thanked the creator of Celebrity Apprentice, but then he went on pronouncing that Arnold Schwarzenegger was the worst host ever of the show.
Because that's why we elected
him. And keep in mind, that was after he accidentally drank some holy water and started yelling, "It burns! It burns!"
Right.
Well, this is... like, I do agree that obviously every president has always been very respectful of any religious organization or whether they're visiting the White House or otherwise. But it's like a handshake. It's like a, okay, I'll sit here like the head of state that I am and listen to your concerns and your beliefs. It isn't a now come to Jesus kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
No,
like, I've never seen a picture of a president bowed in prayer other than in their private parish of
come on,
the religion they're associated with.
Any other administration now to him? He's running on all different cylinders. He's pretty much doing whatever he wants. But the fact is, this swagger that he has about himself is would make, you could say, most Christians wince. But the reality is, it deterred very few white evangelicals to the point where 81% of those voted for him last year. So clearly he has a market here.
But that's, well, that's my point is that, okay, every candidate has just leaned in to whoever's supporting them during their election, during their campaign. Once elected, you're representing the people. You're not supposed to keep being like, oh yeah, you guys scratch my back, now I'm gonna scratch yours.
It's a cheese ball photo op is what it is.
It's somebody
in the communications office saying, we need a win. We need a good, you know, we need some people who like the president to get some photos mm-hmm. out in the press.
No, and that figure that I said, 81%, I mean, this is a figure that one of the most discussed statistics of the 2016 election. And you would think how many conservative Christians relate to him where he is a third-time married casino mogul, businessman who doesn't go to church, says who does not go to church. But, you know, many commentators on this have speculated about these evangelicals that actually did vote for him and they're not evangelicals, especially nobody goes to church and says, I'm a born-again Christian or I'm an evangelical. I think it's this kind of, I don't even know, undescribed or unlabeled group.
Well, any way you slice this, it's a bad look.
Yeah.
And whoever was responsible for this ought to be fired because this is amateur hour. And even if you're going to screw up all of the other finer points of office, which the Trump administration does on an almost daily basis, at least get somebody in there that has some clue about what's going to play in the media right now mm-hmm. and not look like a sideshow.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that, first of all, Lee's made a very good point of that these super duper Christians are supporting a man who's been divorced multiple times, who's had countless affairs, who's scammed the butt out of people.
They don't care.
But again,
he said no abortions. He's
care.
Their hero.
But, Derek's exactly right where it is just like I said, this is some high school stuff. Like, this is like, this is like, not that Facebook existed when I was in high school, but this is like posting a picture of you hugging the captain of the football team when you're in math league. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is...
But this is, I mean, even when Trump was talking to many of these groups prior to the election, and we were in a time of the country did need another nominee for the Supreme Court, and every message I was coming out of these evangelical groups was saying, all right, if you can get somebody or future nomination for the Supreme Court that can rally around the idea of abortion, very few issues matter otherwise. That to these people, that's what it is. You just don't kill the fetuses.
I am reminded...
Don't kill the fetuses.
I am reminded of the year 2007, I believe. Might have been 2008. And I think it was in Estonia. George W. Bush was on the tarmac, and there were all these people near the airplane, and he walked over into the crowd, and everybody was just reaching out and pawing at the president. And it was this really creepy moment. You know, the White House thought, oh, this is going to make people back home see how much everybody here loves our president, when really what it looked like was some sort of weird cult ceremony.
Honest to God, that's exactly, I was looking at it being like, this reminds me when I watched documentaries about like the Manson family or the Source family, like, or Jonestown. Like,
yeah,
that's what
I am not going to go as far as comparing Christian evangelicals to
Oh, I'm not
comparing followers of Manson.
Oh, I'm not comparing them as a group. I'm merely saying the pictures that came as a result of this impromptu meeting are. They looked a little too familiar. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Like, did they sacrifice a chicken?
Like,
was anyone, the first one guy, and he had nine wives.
I haven't seen the picture. Was anyone handling serpents?
Well, the first thing I thought when I saw that picture, the first thing that just popped into my head was that video of Jim Jones when he was just an evangelical preacher in San Francisco and heals a woman who can't walk.
Yeah.
Like that video, I was just like, this picture is that sort of propaganda.
I think Donald Trump, by the way, does have the snake handler vote. So that's good for him looking ahead to 2020. In world news, former Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who was expected to win next year's presidential election, could instead be in jail. Lula was sentenced to 10 years in prison for corruption, but will remain free pending his appeal. Lula was found guilty of accepting $1.2 million in bribes in the form of a renovated beachfront apartment from OASSA, with the work offered to secure contracts from state-run oil company Petróleo Brasileiro. This is also Petrobras, which is at the source of every scandal that is rocking mm-hmm. the Brazilian government right now. We know that Dilma Rousseff was thrown out of office and impeached because of her involvement with Petrobras. Lula was her predecessor and her mentor. He's now looking at 10 years in jail. The odds that he is going to win this case on appeal are Carlos Slim to none.
Yeah.
And
Derek, you kind of touched on it. Let me just set up the landscape for you. Exactly what you just said. You had a president, Dilma Rousseff, who was generating all this construction around the country, but solely only using Petrobras. So not only for fuel, but also for infrastructure, for construction. It's just like, say, here in Boston, if Suffolk Construction, Mayor Marty, oh my God, that sounds so familiar.
Huh.
You mean all the construction in Boston, it actually is from Suffolk.
But the difference,
I'm sorry, I had a little gazuntite there.
The difference being that
it happened again.
That Petrobras is state-owned.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the senior leadership in Brazil is skimming money out of Petrobras.
Oh, essentially.
And shaking down anybody that wants a government contract for bribes to get those deals with Petrobras.
Everybody was constantly lining their pockets. So the minute Rousseff gets out, they go, all right, we're going to take the next person. Michael Tamer, who also has had allegations against him. You go down
still
the line.
Still in office, though.
You go down the line. You're even 25 deep, and that could possibly take over leadership of the country that has some sort of connection.
Well,
you have a completely corrupt country.
We started
with the Olympics.
They were making the point during the Dilma Rousseff impeachment that the next 18 people in line to succeed her were all under some form of investigation
mm-hmm.
for corruption. So, you know,
it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of situation.
At some point, you should just be able to send the United Nations in and say, this is done.
we're just going to, like, do a clean sweep of all of this.
Everybody here in the government, go home. We're taking over. We're going to restart this and run it correctly.
But my question is, with a country like that that has so much corruption, I mean, how do you even completely clean the slate and start fresh again?
You live in the United States of America. You tell me.
If you come up with an answer for that, could you please take care of our government? That'd be fantastic. Yeah. Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah. Because on one side...
Sorry, it took me a second to chime in there. I'm trying not to make seltzer water explode.
I mean, if we're doing a comparison between Brazil and the United States... Majority of Brazil is incredibly impoverished. You have the amount of homeless people living on the streets is unbelievable. Statistics.
That's where you need to follow.
You don't even have a middle class. You don't even really have a 1%. You have a very small percentage of people that do have money that actually run the country. But that's it. It's not this middle of the ground struggling families. It's either you have money or you're living on the streets.
But there's a solution to that. And it comes from the immortal words of Chris Christie. Just get elected governor. and then you can
go wherever you want. Leave. He's just frolicking.
And then you can go on the beach when it's illegal to.
Then you can steal money like everyone else in the government. It's brilliant.
Now, You said you're surprised that Tamara is still in office. Is this going to be another situation where there will be an impeachment, further investigation going on?
At some point, you have to stop. And there's a presidential election coming up next year. I think the general feel, because I haven't heard a lot about the investigation into Tamer. I think you've just thrown one president out. If you throw another president out, your country's sinking into even deeper turmoil. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a general feeling of let it slide. If he gets reelected, then we're going after him. But
Until then,
let it go.
Well, that's the thing is, at this point, it's a PR issue with the rest of the world. Because, like you said, like once you've ousted one president, ousting one president is, hey, this country's taking charge of their future and taking charge of the current state of their affairs. You oust two in such a short period of time. What that says to the rest of the world
but
is
the world is not
they don't
stupid.
Know what the
they
hell
understand
they're doing.
What is going
really,
on
least,
in
do
the
you really do you want to go on record as saying the world is not stupid?
The financial
stop,
markets.
Stop and
everybody
think about that for a
in
moment.
This room understands the situation in Brazil. And we are not talking about a third world country here. You would think if you walked some of the streets in Brazil, you pretty much are. But we're not talking about a small nation that has no global impact on anything.
Brazil is a third world country. They're just a third world country with a lot of people and a lot of purchasing power.
Exactly. You said it right there, purchasing power. So a higher GDP, I mean, not GDP, but import and export within other countries. Look at so many of the countries just as a whole right now in South America. If we're talking about the situation in Venezuela, which a country is completely going under because there is no fuel whatsoever. You have multiple sources for meat that has stopped production going to one of the biggest markets in Asia. China stopped buying meat because what? There's more corruption within the inspectors because, again, it's government officials trying to line their pocket. Oh, you let this slide? Give me money. Oh, I'll let you slide? Give me money.
Yeah.
Build this? More money.
Yeah.
Well, the thing I think is interesting about this in general is just that it's almost like the veil being lifted off of how government works anyway. You know what I mean? Like, this is like obviously an extreme example, but you're exactly right. And that is, it's one of those things, it's taboo. It's one of those things like everyone kind of knows is going on, but nobody talks about it.
I'm hard pressed to find an example as bad as Petrobras.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying is this is obviously the extreme, but it is sort of an extreme example of the maybe 1/100th of that is happening all the time.
I mean, certainly Dick Cheney and Blackwater raises a lot of questions.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Was that a scandal?
Way more, by the way, than Donald Trump owning a hotel in Washington, D.C. does. Mm-hmm. Way more.
I mean, you talk about to the point where pretty much everybody was going to be wearing a Petrobras stamp on their forehead walking around Brazil. Yes, you see it all the time in other countries, and the United States being one, where we see constantly big corporations having some sort of influence on people in Washington. We see it every day. We talk about it so many times on the show and saying, how does this pass? How does this not pass? Because money speaks, and that's all that matters. And unfortunately, when we're talking about politics, for the majority of it, it's all about the money. It's how you can stay in office as long as you can, because your pocket is constantly being lined. You're bought. I want to take that back. Almost every single one in Washington is bought. Are there good politicians? Yes.
But for the most part, it's revolving door syndrome.
The system is to a point now where the handful of straight shooters are going to get voted down by the people who are corrupt. So.
Yeah, but the straight shooters, unfortunately, then start getting influenced by all the people around them. It's like, if you do good all the time, there's a good chance you're going to start doing bad if you're constantly surrounded by that. Or saying, well, this person's getting ahead of me. What are they doing?
Well, it's
I'm going to skirt the rule.
It's precisely like the entertainment industry. Like there's so many parallels between politics and entertainment, but in a nutshell, the system's rigged. There are few that slip by and on the straight and narrow, but at the end of the day, even the ones that started out good are going to see the others who are doing, as you said, who are doing better, and are moving faster than them or are accomplishing more than them or however you'd like to put it, who are going to look and say, I want to know how they're doing that and copy it, no matter how good they started.
But not even that. I mean, if you have a group of 10, eight really crappy people and two really good people, a simple job can be done with only those two people, even though the job technically is required by 10. But when you are surrounded by crap, those other two people are going to become cynical. It's
where do you think we're getting these health bills from?
What's going on in Washington? Oh, well, they're only showing up for a few meetings in Senate, so I can do that. There is no standard anymore in Washington where a politician stands up that does things for their constituents, the people that are voted in. They don't care anymore.
No. Catherine Clark.
They care.
Catherine Clark is all about stopping online bullying. Yeah. She is all about that.
Because that is what
New
Hampshire needs.
The biggest issue facing our country
Thank God she is representing us in Washington, D.C. and standing up to online bullying.
It's the same thing in the news cycle. I mean, screw healthcare. Talk about that? Let's talk more about Russia and more Russian corruption.
I mean, listen, I sit here and I bitch about Elizabeth Warren all the time because her solutions aren't based in economic reality. But what I will give Elizabeth Warren credit for is pointing out how screwed the average American is in our financial system. Mm-hmm. These banks are running roughshod, and these credit card companies are running roughshod over the American people. And it's good to have someone like her in there bringing those points up. Her solutions, completely unworkable. But she at least calls attention to the issue.
Mm-hmm. Today in sports news, we learned what was once an honor is now a punishment. The International Olympic Committee voted unanimously Tuesday to break with tradition and award two games at once. Paris and Los Angeles are the only competitors left for 2024. But it's been clear since early this year that the IOC is leaning towards awarding the next two games at the same time to streamline the selection process and to provide greater financial stability to the games. Hosting a modern Olympic practically guarantees massive debt and cost overruns, and many cities have abandoned bids recently. Researchers at the Oxford Said Business School estimate that the cost overrun for the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro was $1.6 billion. Quote, Brazil is not a unique case. All Summer and Winter Olympic Games have been studied to show cost overruns. For a city or a country to host the Games is a huge undertaking, by one that is most costly and financially risky mega projects that can undertake, end quote, said Brent Fainton, lead researcher. IOC Vice President John Coates suggested Tuesday that the Paris and Los Angeles Olympic committees will be left to figure out who should host which year. The decision would then be ratified in September. If the two cities can't settle the question of who will get which game, the IOC will decide in September. In that case, the 2028 games would be open to additional bidders.
Now, see, this is where I'm confused because I've been...
Fight for it. And they're like, ugh.
I've been following this story and what I thought they were going to do, and that to me made sense, was that one of those cities was going to get the next two summer games. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at that and I was thinking, that's not a bad solution because you can spread out that cost over two summer games. Mm-hmm. And
so we're talking about 8 years.
So you're getting 8 years of use out of everything. Plus, people are going to want to train in there in the interim. That could be a win. But no, they're like, you're the only two left. Apparently, neither Los Angeles nor Paris came up with enough bribe money, is what's really being said by the IOC.
Let me rewind back to when we were talking about Boston 2024. And I know,
you are so sad you weren't here for that, Shay. You would have loved it.
I am I'm going on the record to say that yes, I am.
The weekly RAND sessions that Derek and I had, typically, which ended
would have been such a disaster.
Oh, the absolute joke of a debate that they had on Fox, where some guy from New York came in and was like, well, traffic, yeah, people just get used to it. And it's like, no, guy, that's not the way that this is going to work.
I just spent three years living in Los Angeles. I promise you.
Was it the beach volleyball in the
In Boston Common?
Boston Commons, yeah. Or was it the rowing?
On the Charles?
On the Charles.
Still cleaner than Pooh Bay down there in Brazil.
It actually is. But let me rewind for all of our listeners to when, yes, that discussion in Boston 2024 weekly happened for us. Derek, you had brought up something that, or 2020. I'm sorry, it was Boston 2020.
No, it was Boston 2024. Yeah.
You had come up with the solution of, because we are seeing countless games, whether winter or summer Olympics, we're
Athens
not in...
Athens lost money. London lost money. Mm-hmm. Brazil lost money. China may have lost money. It's China. We don't know.
Yeah.
It's pretty much guaranteed that it's not going to stimulate a city's economy.
But this is what it is. It's fallacies based on this beautiful rendering pictures and sunshine and rainbows, which in reality it's not, because we break it down and talk about this. But what Derek said made so much sense to me, and I'm sure it will to you too. You have a designated Summer Olympic venue.
Olympic Island.
A designated Winter Olympic area.
Olympic Mountain.
And then everybody says, well, how does that happen? Because the whole thing is, you know, a country still hosts. Well, yes, a country is awarded to host. They bring in everything. You're going to cut the cost down by so much. Now you have something. You have facilities that, one, actually work, and you're not getting locked in your own bathroom and having to kick down the door, or you're not. I mean, look at all the issues that we're having in Brazil. Oh, I'm sorry, there's crocodiles on the golf course. Oh, I'm sorry, you can't have your bike on the bike path anymore because the cliffs are, shedding rock.
You can make an argument that from 1900 to 2000, so for the duration of the 20th century, the Olympics was actually a reasonable infrastructure project, mm-hmm. especially in the first half of the 20th century and in the years immediately after World War II.
We were going through the Industrial Revolution,
right,
of course.
We needed infrastructure, and this was an opportunity for cities to build stadiums and build roads and bridges and hotels, knowing that they were going to cover the upfront cost of that and then have them to use afterward. What happened as we got into the latter part of the 20th century is that doesn't work anymore, because the cost to build this stuff has far outstripped what mm-hmm. you can make over the course of an Olympic Games. And the Olympic Games increasingly is looking for all this purpose-built nonsense that you can't do anything with afterward. It's like the bride saying, you'll totally wear that dress again.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
No, you're not. You're never,
oh, that's such a good analogy.
You're never going to use that velodrome again. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants a velodrome in their backyard.
Heather, if you're listening, rare. I have a present I made for you out of the bridesmaid's dress that I will never wear again.
No. It's very rare that you're going to have a country that, exactly like you just said, continually starts using this. I'm going to say Japan might be the only one where you're going to, because they did need in Tokyo a new baseball stadium, which they are going to use for the Olympics. But whatever cost is projected for it, now, before we were seeing maybe $50 million overrun, $100 million, and then we started trickling into
billions.
Yeah. The $500 millions.
Yeah.
Now, just finding out with Brazil, $1.6 billion in a country which we just discussed.
Yeah, we literally just discussed is impoverished.
No money whatsoever. So now you're coming to me and saying, and Donald Trump tweeted it out, I believe it was last night, because it was after the IOC announced Los Angeles is in the running to get one of the two games, and he's very excited for that. For Los Angeles, it's insane to me, and I understand the pride of your country, and you do want to host. Operationally, it's a complete cluster.
Yeah, but keep in mind, Los Angeles is looking for an opportunity to rip down everything around the Staples Center and rebuild all of it.
I can attest to that, having lived right near the Staples Center.
Yeah. Does the city have the money?
They want to rip all of that out.
This will be an excuse to basically eradicate Skid Row. Like, to eradicate everything. Like, I lived when my most recent place before I moved back to the same part of the country in Los Angeles was two blocks from Skid Row. And I remember reading the proposals to have the Olympics in Los Angeles. And a lot of it, not even financially, but just morally, was to legitimize cleaning up, because I don't know, I mean, very few people on this side of the country know much about Skid Row, but it basically, so it its crux is at 6th Street and San Pedro, and then it goes out in every direction for 6 or 7 blocks. And it within that scope is right where the Staples Center starts.
Yeah.
And were Los Angeles to host the Olympics, which as we can see, it seems it's going to happen, they would have a perfect excuse to be like, fine, screw you.
Yeah.
Now we have a reason to kick all of you
here
out.
Come yeah, the bulldozers.
But the thing is, you're going to temporarily displace the druggies and the homeless people when all these
buildings are... They don't consider themselves
are,
homeless, by the way.
Yeah.
Their tent is their home.
You know, all these people are going to come back to the area.
Well, they can, after the Olympics are over, they can live in the Velodrome.
All right,
well,
I'm gonna take Derek's crystal ball that he uses so much, and I'm going to give it a little rub, and... What is going to happen? Los Angeles is going to back out once all of these, you know, beautiful pictures.
No. Well, in 2025, we're going to have the homeless drone.
What's going to happen is that Venice Beach is no longer, it's no longer to be going to be possible to go there to surf or sunbathe, because where some homeless people now live on Venice Beach and most of them live in Skid Row, now all of them will live on Venice Beach.
No. You know why that won't happen? Because the guys on Muscle Beach will kick them out. The guys on Muscle Beach will just form a line and like, anybody tries setting up a tent, 5 guys are coming over and kicking it down.
Don't you try to get on
those rings. I've met some pretty strong homeless people.
I'm not messing with the guys on Muscle Beach. They like it down there.
By the way, have you ever seen someone on PCP? I don't care if they have like 0.01 muscle density. You're on PCP, you can beat the crap out of someone from Muscle Beach. But honest to God, though, I do think, and having lived there, it's palpable. The city's desire to, like, I mean, and it is...
And that area was a mess back in 2005,
I was going to say, and it keeps closing in and closing in and closing in. Even over the year and a half that I lived in that neighborhood, I had to drive through Skid Row to get to my gym, to get to the not Skid Row parts of downtown. And it, even in that year and a half, it was palpable seeing... Okay, well, it used to go to this street, and now it's 1 block in, and now it's 1.5 blocks in, and it's Los Angeles has been looking for an excuse to just completely eradicate it. That being said, having the Olympics in LA will be a disaster. From a traffic standpoint, there's already enough construction road work. Everyone is so far up their own ass.
Cities
there
are necessarily smart when they back out. Denver being one, they backed out a couple years. Boston somehow woke up. Oh, actually, no. They didn't wake up because Mayor Marty Walsh, if it was up to him, they would. But the people of Boston were very vocal on not having it. Los Angeles, and when you're seeing other countries do this, or cities, they're doing it only for personal reasons. Just like you said, they want to rebuild Los Angeles. The way to do that is not by hosting an Olympics. That is not how you get the homeless people out and rebuild a city.
Yes, it is.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, you got to move. We're building the Velodrome.
It's a disaster, and it's selfish for these cities to do that.
The cities don't want homeless people.
Clearly.
They'd rather have a velodrome that no one uses. But the one thing
to be fair, they could, as you said, they could just house the homeless people.
I don't know that traffic necessarily becomes that big of a problem, because public transportation actually goes to that part of town.
It does, but what you have to realize about Los Angeles is, number one, very few people use public transportation. Those who do are typically, that's the thing, it's like public transit,
but
9 times out of 10 is a less convenient decision.
You're not talking about something for the locals. This is for international travelers, and they're going to come in and stay in hotels
take
the train.
But I am talking about the locals in terms of the uproar that's going to result. All these people... Oh, God, it's so weird to talk about L.A. All of the locals in Los Angeles are in business for themselves, and that's what that city's about. That's fine. But
you don't say.
But they're not. There are. I've been to so many different cities, and there are cities that welcome outsiders with open arms, that love the influx of international what have you. And LA is not one of them.
No.
This is going
LA's
to be
full, and it has
like,
been for
if
a long
anything,
time.
I was going to say, LA is full. Yeah. Exactly. And this is going to be something that I don't have your crystal ball, D, but I do know that there will be some sort of something as a result of this uproar, whatever, what have you.
No, because in the middle of the night, they're going to round them up, put them on buses, and send them to Bakersfield. So that's how you deal with that out there.
Or Buttonwillow. Buttonwillow's worse than Bakersfield.
Well, today in food news, we learned Europeans may not be enjoying their nightcap bourbon. The U.S. bourbon industry has warned that its business and consumers around the world will be harmed if the European Union acts on a regulatory threat to target American whiskey exports. At the G20 summit in Hamburg on Friday, the European Commissioner President Jean-Claude Juncker said that if the U.S. took measures against Germany and China's steel industry, the EU would, quote, react with countermeasures, end quote, within a few days. Officials confirmed that one of the target products would be bourbon whiskey, 95% which comes from Kentucky. The home state
said,
of
watch it.
Right, the home state of U.S. Senator Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and a state that voted 62.5% for Trump in last year's election. Bourbon brings $166 million in tax revenue to Kentucky annually, and the industry employs nearly 17,000 people in the state, according to the Kentucky Distillers Association. The U.S. Congress declared in 1964 that bourbon could only be made in the United States, as tequila must be made in Mexico and champagne in France. Bourbon, a mix of water, grain, yeast, has historically been popular in Europe, and U.S. distilleries have recently been looking to grow their export market in Asia and Australia. In 2016, U.S. spirit exports to the European Union were valued at $654 million, and 20% of that was from bourbon whiskey, according to the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States.
Let's call it what it is. It's corn whiskey.
This is really interesting, the fact that
it's
we're
not
talking
all corn,
about
actually.
At the G20 summit.
I just
summit,
went to the Maker's Mark distillery. Don't miss them on bourbon knowledge.
There's
got
to be some corn in it somewhere.
Oh, they have corn whiskey, but it's not all made with corn.
It's supposed to be.
No. When we have the G20 summit, which talks about, you know, all the workings with the big countries, and here in the United States, a message from President Trump has been, buy America, make America, we're going to only use our steel. Now we have the European Union giving threats to industries that you don't even think of, something like a bourbon industry, where it generates a very, very large annual income for the people of the area and employs people.
Not, you are correct. Actually, there is corn in all bourbon.
Not quite. It's corn whiskey. That's what makes it bourbon.
I was confusing with the wheat and the malted barley. Sorry, continue.
Not quite, but you're close. What they're doing is they are targeting an industry that is controlled by a very small number of very large companies that are known to have the ear of the United States Congress and the President of the United States. This is the kind of threat that you make as sort of a diplomatic weapon.
Well, yeah, we were just talking about
we know this is all you guys, that only you will be affected by this.
Because here's the thing. They can threaten Google and Facebook. Google and Facebook and Amazon are bigger than the United States government. Mm-hmm. And the European Union can threaten them all day long, and the U.S. government doesn't care. Because Google and Facebook and Amazon are largely telling the government what to do anyway. So if the European Union threatens them, the government is just going to say, you've got the money, too bad.
No, of course. Yeah. If we're talking about the whiskey.
If Jack Daniels and Jim Beam are knocking on
Maker's Mark, yep.
Are knocking on Nancy Pelosi's door.
Well done, Lisa.
Saying, hey, we're going to lose 40% of our business. What are you going to do about it? That's a different story.
Yeah, that's going to get a reaction.
But is that going to be enough to completely change the dynamics between what was planned for only utilizing American steel compared to importing it from Asia in the European Union?
Well, what you have to remember, beyond the fact that these are solely based American companies, is not just that they're American, it's where they are in America.
But
a lot of the support for the current administration comes from precisely the area of the country that we're talking about these come out of. And they're, sure, while they are large distribution-wise, employee-wise, all of that, you can't, it cannot be called bourbon unless it is from Kentucky.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. It's if the European Union wants to play that game, Tennessee why are we whiskey? Saying, oh, you know what? We're going to stop buying champagne. We'll get cava from Spain. We'll
because
get,
then all well, these no, Americans who yeah, love champagne are going to be pissed.
Yeah.
But because, well, at the end of, well, at the end of the day, like, that's, I think, honestly, not to America, I love you. You know I do. But well done, EU. This was,
yeah,
like
this isn't
the
even,
best.
This is,
no, but this was the
only
best.
Only one industry. There's but this multiple
was,
things.
Of course, but this was the best chip to play because there are so many, as Derek said, there are so many American companies that have reached beyond our borders. You know, like even if they tried to say, okay, well, then we're not going to allow any more McDonald's. It'd be like, well, there's already a ton of McDonald's in Europe. Like, mm-hmm, that's your, no,
but
that's
those
not
are also
work.
Those are also locally owned franchises. Well, it's not no, an but, it's not an export. This is a direct
but,
shot
well,
across
I'm,
the bow of
saying,
our export
But this is
market.
What I'm saying is this is like, you can only get this here. Like, you can only get this here from, and not just here, but from this particular red state.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
but you
and
can't
it is,
tell me
it's,
if it
it's
was
a very good chip to play. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure the Jameson Distillery is like, woo, over this, but
yeah, but you can't tell me that solely if it was only just bourbon that the European Union is threatening to put a halt to, that this would affect the grand scheme of what would be going on in a multi-billion dollar steel industry that could be flourished in the United
the
States.
One
it
is,
would, no, no, what but it is the European Union specifically targeting little things here and there.
No,
but it's, and, but
no,
I agree
no.
The thing
the
is,
one,
no, but
it's not. It's not.
The one
but,
is directly related to the other. Well, and, this is the European Union saying you're going to cut off our steel exports. Fine, we're going to cut off your bourbon exports.
Well, and,
how do you like that?
Well, and what you
that's
have to
the game
think about,
that's being played.
And what you have to think about is that by saying they're going to cut off our bourbon exports is not just saying these distilleries are going to lose money. As we kind of touched upon, the ingredients of bourbon are wheat, corn, and barley. Who else is that attacking our country? Who else does that threaten the livelihood
the
of
wheat,
in our
corn,
country?
And barley,
it's not all corn.
The wheat, corn, and barley farmers will be fine.
They'll be fine, but they'll take a hit, and they will.
No, they won't.
They will
still
no,
be making
will, but
all that
nonetheless,
that
it's,
all
still in, it's still in their interest.
They won't,
it's still in their interest.
They won't take,
don't tell me they won't take a hit. Do you know how huge the bourbon industry in this country is?
I understand that. But in terms of the amount of wheat, corn, barley that they use, the barley goes to the beer industry. The wheat mm-hmm. goes to the bread industry. The corn, it, you can make more money
not,
turning
but
it into
not,
ethanol.
I'm not saying I'm not saying they'll take a hit in that their businesses will go under. I'm saying that the EU, by doing this, even if it's only symbolically, it's not just saying bourbon. It's saying all of these jobs, all of these, even if it's 0.03 of a farmer's profit providing this to Evan Williams or
okay.
Maker's Mark yeah. or
we're
who what
we're
have
still,
you.
We're still, the two of you are still off track with this. So
no, I'm completely understanding what you're saying.
Educate us,
let
Derek,
me,
please.
Let me,
what I'm trying to explain to you is what the threat is being made by the European Union. They're not specifically pinpointing solely bourbon. This is one of many that they've been talking about. So it's,
but it's, well, I think the reason that it, like I said, it's not necessarily about the financial threat. It's what it symbolizes. It's the symbol of, like, this is a thing that is purely American. If we can go after this, hey, stay tuned. If you keep messing with us, what we're going to do next. You know what I mean? Like, it's
okay.
Very.
We've got Aaron joining us on the phone who wanted to weigh in on this. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Hi, Aaron. How's it going?
Hi.
So what's your two cents on the bourbon controversy coming out of Europe?
So the comment of Jameson is probably going woohoo over this, and it, they're probably not, because when you have an import that then excites people about an item like bourbon or whiskey or however, you know, whatever it be, now you're actually taking away, because people are going to be less likely to look on the shelf because whatever they were looking there, that mix isn't there. When you go to the liquor store and you look at, you know, all the liquors or the whiskeys and the bourbons and stuff like that, you see 30 labels. You don't just see one label.
Right.
So now all the people that, now when they pull all the bourbon off the shelf and people are starting to move towards other alcohols that are produced, they're no longer looking at small production. They're going to look at the things that they know again, because mm-hmm. they're not going to be looking for anything that's creative or fun or exciting. They want to go with something that they know, because they know that it's going to be good.
Really,
that
the is, only
that is a, the opportunity.
Really, that the only winner ever is InBev. They're the only ones that ever win.
This is my comments. So let me address that, Aaron. I think you do make a very good point. I actually is kind of saying that facetiously, but just to back up what my point was, is just that. While I do think you're correct that people who have a specific type of alcohol they like, if it suddenly gets dragged out from under them, they're going to turn elsewhere. There are enough people who, like myself, actually, who are like, this is the type of spirit I like. I do not like vodka. I do not like tequila. I do not like gin. I like whiskey. And if all of a sudden, and I prefer bourbon, to be perfectly frank, my Irish ancestors are rolling over in their graves now that they heard me say that. But nonetheless.
Don't worry. Jameson's made by a Scotsman.
Yeah, so screw them straight in the ear, right? But my point being that there, while I agree with you that there will be people that will just have fallout over whiskey products in general, there will be an equal amount of, or there theoretically would be an equal amount of people who were typically sampling our various American brown spirits that would just be like, well, Jameson's still whiskey, whatever.
I don't know. I got to go with Aaron on this because...
I agree.
I can remember when certain types
of... Oh, now there's three of you ganging up against me. God.
When there were certain types of beer that I liked that were discontinued.
Well, okay, so I haven't listened to this show long enough to know who is who. Derek, you're the only guy there. I got that.
Yes.
She's the smart one. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm the really smart one.
Oh, touche, Lisa Nichols.
Well, Lisa's our expert on all things beer and wine and food.
I was going to say, that's why I like okay. arguing no, alcohol
you know,
with her.
But no,
Aaron, you do make a very good point. I just wanted to present where my statement came from.
You know, and this is why I bring up so many...
Mine comes from the general consumer, though, not from anyone that's going to be looking at, like, from an educated standpoint. They're going to be, I'm talking about somebody that's going to walk into the liquor store.
Oh, no,
like,
Lisa's the smart one with booze. I'm just a dumb Irish chick who happens to know about some things.
Oh, no, I know who Lisa is. I know who Lisa is. So I know her prowess with alcohol and food.
Oh my goodness, your reputation precedes you, Nichols.
Follows me everywhere.
Instagram is an amazing thing, isn't it, Lisa?
It is.
Pork and Pines Boston, Jay.
Aaron, hey. Thank you for your call. Keep listening.
Thank you so much for calling up.
Now, let me...
Next time, could you put a listener through who agrees with me? I'd really prefer that, Derek.
I'm
just kidding, Aaron. I love you.
I want to bring this back to what's... going on, why they're doing this, okay? Yeah. What did we do when Russia meddled in our election, or when Russia invaded Ukraine,
allegedly,
or when Russia did any of the things that we don't like Russia doing? We float economic sanctions against the top 20 business
like
people in the
country. Mm-hmm.
Because when you make life difficult for the oligarchs, they put pressure on Putin. Mm. This is the same exact thing. This is Europe saying, hey... let's go get some Kentucky senators riled up.
Of course.
These sanctions.
How many times does it happen here in the United States where it's no changes are made until you hurt the rich people?
Right.
Then they get angry.
And then all of a sudden the issue's really,
really important.
And then
Washington starts making some moves.
Well, gee, maybe we shouldn't cut down those steel imports.
That was my basic point. The baseline is just that the EU is brilliant in choosing this because it's something that will... actually end up mattering to these people who are making these decisions.
Yeah, because you're going to have Rand Paul and a few other senators like all bent out of shape. Like,
hey, can you shut these people up? Like, do something just to...
The whiskey people aren't paying for my reelection. You got to help me. In technology news, brace yourselves, kids. This one's scary. Tomatoes.
I'm already terrified.
You're going to be. Tomatoes have a secret weapon in their war against caterpillars. Cannibalism.
What?
Researchers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison isolated a compound called methyl jasminate, which occurs naturally in tomatoes under attack by pests. In a controlled study, the chemical caused caterpillars to eat each other rather than the plants, and higher concentrations caused the caterpillars to eat each other more quickly. Researchers theorize that the chemical causes caterpillars to believe that there is less nutrition in the tomato plants than in their fellow creatures. And they also noted that production of the chemical increases in all tomato plants in an area shortly after one is attacked by pests.
Yeah, there's a great article in The Verge on this. Headline
is... The Verge or The Purge?
When attacked, tomato plants release a chemical that makes caterpillars eat each other.
Now, This to me is fat because we sit around, we look at plants, and we're like, you see plants get eaten by stuff, you're like, plants, they're like suckers.
No, of course, I have so many friends.
Which is why Venus flytraps are so fascinating.
But the thing about it is plants are continually evolving along with everything else to fend off predators. I've put forward the theory for many years now that something has changed in the chemistry of peanuts, which is why we're seeing such a big increase in peanut allergies. That if you took a peanut from 50 years ago and a peanut from today, you'd find there is some compound in there that we don't like, that the peanuts are like, it kills them. Make more of that. But this is like...
This is some like we were all worried about the robots taking over. Yeah. We should have been worried about the vegetables, man. I'm sorry. The fruit. No one call in and yell at me for calling a tomato.
H.P. Lovecraft.
I had this conversation this morning and then talking to Warren about how, you know, I'm like, I want to start growing some more because I've done it in the past. I was recently at my friend's house who has been teaching me.
I like growing
more.
Plants too. Wank, wank.
About having a green thumb, and you know, it's something now that you can do just on a patio with some plants. Mm. But we're discussing how hard it is to maintain them with whether you're talking about rabbits or insects, or that's the number one thing that people discuss with these plants. Oh, you got to watch out for this. You got to watch out for this.
I grew a whole bunch of tomatoes last year.
I need to net these because whatever.
Maybe because
is
they
going
were killing all the caterpillars they were supposed to eat.
But it is. It's fascinating science where you can now have a fruit or vegetable release some sort of chemical.
WMFO Medford.
That is going to completely change. I don't know.
Here's
how you even
describe
that.
I mean, it's actually.
This is fascinating to me on the one hand.
Super fascinating.
But on the other hand, they've isolated...
up top, Nichols.
They've isolated the chemical that causes cannibalism. This is how the zombie holocaust begins.
I never thought it'd be you. They take some notes out of Hannibal Lecter's
The chemical gets out somewhere and suddenly people are eating each other on the subway. Well, that's where we're going, folks.
I think we're a little ways away from it evolving to that.
No. I think we're in full-on Walking Dead territory here right now.
I was just going to say, this story completely interests you, not for the food aspect of it.
But for the zombie apocalypse aspect.
Is this the stuff that's in bath salts?
This is so cool.
Is this what's in bath salts that makes everyone crazy?
That actually would be an interesting thing to look into.
That, you know, just... all the Patriots strip down and walk on to the police station on.
Oh, and by the way, they assure us that this chemical is perfectly safe for humans.
Mm. Oh, good.
Until they figure out how much it takes to make a human want to eat somebody.
I will say, as much as, that the concept that you're referring to is quite terrifying, it is just impressive because you always think of... you always think of animals as evolving, even if it's, you know, so incredibly slowly that it's not really recognizable. But I feel like plants never get the credit they deserve, you know? And way to go, tomatoes.
They're just sitting there and they're like, all right, yeah, come on over, eat me.
Yeah, you want to underestimate me? I'm going to make caterpillars eat each other.
I'll tell you something. It is WMFO Medford. We have to say that, don't we?
Oh, I already said it. But you can do it again.
There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
The severe weather warning for Middlesex County is breaking even as we speak, but keep an eye out for thunderstorms tonight. There may still be some around as the night stays steamy and temperatures fall only to about 70 degrees. Tomorrow, steamy thunderstorms, high in the low 70s, low around 60 degrees tomorrow night because what's going to happen once those thunderstorms get out of here? The cool, refreshing Canadian air comes blowing in.
Ah, me gusta mucho.
But we don't get rid of the rain, so Friday you can look forward to a high of just 65 degrees.
What?
Storms and showers all day long.
These are hate words, Derek.
I'll be in Vermont. Maybe I should bring a jacket.
Low around 60 degrees on Friday night. Saturday, clouds in the morning, and then the sun comes back and the temperature goes up a little bit. High of about 80 on Saturday. Lows in the mid-60s Saturday night. Sunday is your pick for the weekend. Mostly sunny.